We are gathered together in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, God manifested in the flesh. 1 Timothy 3:16, the Word become flesh. John 1:14, who was born of the seed of David according to the flesh and declared the Son of God with power, according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead. Romans 1, 3, and 4. God's own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh. Romans 8, 3, who has now reconciled us in the body of His flesh through death. Colossians 1, 22, 21 and 22. The Son of God. 1 John 4:15, and a flurry of other verses as well, but that one, the confession of the abiding believer who has come in the flesh, 2 John 7. We are involved in an ongoing study of our Lord Jesus Christ by means of the book of Proverbs. So if you would turn in your copy of the Scriptures to Proverbs chapter 24, we will be looking at verses 23 to 29 this evening, seven verses. We're trying to be ambitious again. And since we are in the Old Testament, as it is my custom with you, when we encounter the words Lord or God written entirely in capital letters in the Old Testament of the New King James Version, that is our basis text for the teaching of the Old Testament, I will read it for you as Yahweh, because the translators have given us that indication that the divine name Yahweh is found in those places. So read with me, read along silently as I read our text in these verses for this evening. Proverbs 24, verses 23 through 29. These also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, "You are righteous," him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. He who gives a right answer kisses the lips. Prepare your outside work, make it fit for yourself in the field, and afterward build your house. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause, for would you deceive with your lips? Do not say, "I will do to him just as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work." All right, verse 23. These also belong to the wise. That is, there are more Proverbs. We've gotten to chapter 24, and we are it's like a little more than halfway through it. But at this point, the writer says, these also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. Partiality in the Hebrew, very similar in the Greek, in the New Testament, is to know faces. In the Greek, it's to receive faces. And the idea is, let me give you sort of an example of this, not an example really of this, but I'll kind of paint a picture for you of recognizing a face. I was in the room over here. We just had our Greek class, and as I was in the room, my back was turned. I heard someone open the door, and I thought it was our last Greek student that we were waiting for. It wasn't there yet, so I just said the person's name, and I turned around, and it was somebody different than that. I'm thinking, oh, it's this person. When I turn around, I recognize someone different than who I thought it was. God never gets taken by surprise. You can't know everything and know it all ahead of time and be surprised. God's never been surprised. That's one thing. He just doesn't relate to you. He understands what it is like for us to be surprised because He knows everything. But because He knows everything, He's never been surprised. But if you were to kind of think of it like when God sees a person, if He could not know who it was, if He saw a person and, oh, it's this person because He recognizes them, does He know faces like He doesn't know some faces and He knows other faces? Does He, New Testament, does He receive faces? That is, does He receive certain ones? I think the way that God has done things is in everything is just really amazing. But some of the things I think they are sort of like a strange, amazing. Have you ever tried, like, even just with a very limited amount of, I don't know how you could say it, physical differences? If I could teach you how to draw, and I said, you're going to draw different people like this, they will look differently if you, depending on how you draw them. Some people have very large eyes. Other people have small eyes. Some people have flatter noses. Others have pointed noses. It's people with more pointed noses like me that really hurts when you hit them, if you punch them in the nose. You know, because all of your force is coming down on a smaller area. And wider lips, thinner lips, broader mouths, shorter mouths, higher cheekbones, all kinds of things go into making someone's face. I think it's amazing. I just think it's amazing. There are billions of people on the earth today, and God has so many combinations and so many little subtle things that He does with people's faces that you know hundreds of people, and as soon as you see them in Walmart, that's why I don't like to go to Walmart. It's not like I'm against people, but, you know, go to Walmart, and it's just like I always see somebody I know there, and out of all of the people that I know, all of those subtle differences, you know, it's just like a millimeter here, you know, a millimeter there, longer, shorter, whatever. But the combination of all those things, and the fact that your mind can process all that information and register it all at once, so that all you have to do is look at someone and you know who they are. That just amazes me. Maybe it's like silly. You'd think like, what? You'd spend too much time thinking about things like that. But that is amazing to me. And when you've been in Walmart, have you ever done this? I spend a lot, most of my time in Walmart. I'll show you exactly what I do in Walmart. When I'm in Walmart, this is what I do. Almost all the time I'm in Walmart, I do this. I'm looking for my wife down every aisle, doing that. That's all I'm doing, is just looking. And it amazes me how when I traverse the store from one end to the other, in every one of those aisles, she's never in any of those aisles. And I have to do it again. So I start doing the side aisles. I'll go do the other side and start doing this as I go down the side. And have you ever done this when you're in Walmart or Giant Eagle or anything? I refuse to say Giant Eagle and be a Pittsburghese person. You know, but have you ever done this? Have you ever gone You're getting ready to go down the one aisle and you recognize a face. You know a face. And you go, oh God. You know, and you go back. Like, I don't want to go down there. I don't want to encounter that person. You have immediately, instantly, in a moment of time, you recognize who that person is. Your mind does this thing that God made it to do, to take in all this information and process it in a split second. All of those little changes. But when you go, and you are not receiving that face. Maybe you are thinking they have something against me. And so when you see, and as soon as you see the person, you think, oh, and your heart dies inside. Like, they perceive that I did something against them, and oh, I'm going to have to deal with it. Or have you done, and you're, oh, and you want to go, and you want to go down the aisle, because there you're receiving that face. I try, you know, I'm going down, and there's, you know, and there's Alex, and it, in that all that happens, the computer registers it, I want to go talk to Alex, because I receive his face. I receive his person, really. But I know his person because I recognize his face. God doesn't do that. First of all, he doesn't have the fear of man on anything, so he never was like, ooh. You know, he's never afraid of anyone. But God, it's the Hebrew idiom, no faces, like, he doesn't act one way toward one person and another way toward another, all things being equal. The idea is to show partiality, to be sure. It is not good to no faces, receive faces, show partiality in judgment. Now that's positive or negative. That is, it's not good to show partiality for this one, against that one, in judgment. If you are in a situation where you must make a judgment, you should make that judgment based on justice. That is, that which is just. Another word, it's a synonym for righteousness. That which is righteous. Jesus said, in the days of His flesh when He was with us, as God with us, He said, don't judge according to sight, according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. You have to make a judgment. He doesn't say, be done with all judging, don't ever make an evaluation, don't ever analyze anything, or you'll be judging. No, He says, you must make a right judgment, but you must make that judgment upon righteous principles, and in a situation that calls for judgment, it is not good to know faces, to show partiality. Now certainly, maybe you, when you read this, you only think of a forensic situation. That is, a legal setting. A judicial scene. It certainly applies to that. Certainly applies to that. But it's not limited to that. If one was a judge and they saw someone that was their friend, they shouldn't rule in favor of their friend because, well, after all, I'm their friend. That's my friend. The judge is to judge impartially and objectively with no sentimentality, with no subjectivity. He is to judge on the basis of principle. And that principle in a judicial setting would be law. It's not good to show partiality. Deuteronomy talks about it. It says right back to back. It talks about the one possibility and then the other. It says that you shall not show partiality to the poor in his cause, nor to the rich. So that you don't say, I'm going to rule in favor of this rich guy because he can help me. He's got a lot of power if I favor the rich will favor me from some kind of selfish, sinful motivation. But at the same time, a false philanthropy should not motivate you either and say, this guy's poor. Maybe he did this that happened, but, you know, maybe he's guilty, but he's been being ripped off all of his life. This guy's a rich guy. He can shoulder it. He can take it. It's not going to hurt him. This poor guy stole this rich guy's chicken so that he could kill it and eat it. It's not going to financially hurt the rich guy at all. Poor guy needed it to eat. You don't pity the poor in a justice situation. You rule if it is found that he is guilty of stealing the chicken. You rule in favor of the rich. Because you're ruling in favor of truth, no matter what you do. Have you ever seen it? I don't know if it comes from some Greek mythology thing or something, and I certainly don't mean to endorse Greek mythology. Actually, I think it does come from there. But have you ever seen the depiction of justice as a woman with scales and she's blindfolded? Because justice is supposed to be blind. In other words, whatever goes on the scale, that's what we register, not the person who's in front of us. We register truth on the scale of judgment, not faces. So in a forensic situation, that's definitely the case. But it's not limited to a judge. If so, this would be a very impractical verse for most of us, never finding ourselves in that situation at all. And sometimes that's the case with the Scripture, that it doesn't have a real practical application for most of us. Many of the things that Proverbs says about how a king ought to rule. Most of us aren't ever going to be in that situation. Some of us have like situations, like I have a leadership position in our church. You can make analogies to it, but most of us will never be in those positions. So it's not like we're saying anything against it. It's not saying it's got to be somehow discernibly practical to you to be of any value. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying that it would be the case, but I wouldn't limit it to that here. In a family, family situations, there are always situations that call for judgment in a family. I mean, they're happening all the time. Flesh-filled people who happen to be related to each other are going to butt heads. They're going to have problems. One is going to perceive that the other has somehow hurt them. And usually, in most families, there's a real freedom to talk about those perceived injustices with other members of the family. I think that if those things happen, that it really ought to come to the point, come to the head of truth with the father / husband of that family, particularly when we're talking in a Christian scenario, that there ought to be some dispensing of divine perspective, Christocentric perspective in that case. In a family, you had a very famous family in the Bible. God is calling Himself the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Once you got to Isaac, the God of Abraham, Isaac, both parents that had children, Isaac and his wife Rebekah, both they had two sons, and each of the parents had their favorite. They kind of crossed like that. Jacob's favorite was Esau, for the greatest reason, too. I mean, just fantastic reason. Because he filled his stomach with something that he liked the taste of on its way down. Great reason to show favoritism. I mean, this totally carnal reason. But Jacob favored. I'm sorry, Jacob was favored by Isaac because, no. Esau was favored by Isaac because Esau hunted and brought him game that he liked the taste of it. Rebekah favored Jacob. And look at the problems that you have in that family because of that favoritism as you read that account. There should be no favoritism shown in cases where judgment is required in a family. What if you have not favored, not like, I like this child better than that child, but what if you have problem child, and then you have the good child? The good child should not be favored. The good child, the scales of justice, you know, as you do the justice thing, you shouldn't go like, he's the right one, you know, because he's the good child. He's the one that doesn't give me problems. In a case of justice, of judgment, boy, I love justice. Man, am I for justice. Righteous standards impartially applied in interpersonal relationships. There's me. There's my brother A. There's my brother B. We make a threesome together. There's this triangle here. In those interpersonal relationships, there's a case of judgment. I have these two friends. I'm not to favor one over the other when there is some judgment to be dispensed. And when we talk about judgment, we're not talking about some always punitive thing. We're just saying, if two come to me, two individuals come to me, and they ask for a decision, they ask for a judgment in the sense of, what would be prudent in your opinion? We shouldn't color that judgment given who is in front of us. We need to proceed according to facts, which is in the spiritual realm, it is truth. In a church setting, there are needs, there are necessary times where judgment must be dispensed. Two people or two groups have problems with each other. Paul talks to the Corinthians, he says, in language like this, because they just kept infighting. He said, isn't it so, or is it so, that there is not even one man, one wise man among you, who may decide, who may judge between his brethren? This is almost unheard of today, where in a church situation, I have a problem with her. And it's nothing against you ladies, but it's far more of those deal with hers than do with hims. Oh man. All the time, things I see that men would just absorb it and let it go, I see that women get like so offended and just I can't deal with her anymore. Sister A, Sister B have this squabble, this rift between each other. This is almost unheard of, that they would go to someone else that they recognize has wisdom, that they recognize is impartial, that they recognize as being a truth walker, and simply say, we can't come to an agreement here. Recognize that some brother or some other sister, you're a person of truth. We're going to set our case before you and simply submit to what you say. Well, that would require humility. We'd rather die than humble ourselves. And you would. You're dying on the vine here. You're dying spiritually. You're involved in carnal death. And you'd rather have that than the necessary humility that would simply present the case, both sides, to the objective hearer and submit to the godly, mature one, or ones. So interpersonal relationships, not good. In a church, not good. Show partiality. If I have two people come to me, let's say one person, I see them almost every Sunday, and others I see them on Sunday and McKelvey Monday and 5 days a week back in the noontime studies these days and Wednesday night and Friday night. Those two people are in front of me. Those issues don't come into view. Someone told me one time there was an issue. It dealt with a person in my family. They said, I realize that this is going to be really hard to be objective because this person's in your family. No, it isn't. As a matter of fact, what you may think would be difficult for me to be objective, like I want to rule in favor of my family member, probably it's the other way around. Probably it's like, I know my family member, and I've seen this pattern all the time. It could go both ways, and neither one knows. Those things should not enter the picture at all. Personally, I fail in a lot of things. I mess a lot of things up. I walk away out of certain situations, you know, kicking in the middle voice. I mean, just kicking myself about how I handled that one or this thing. But one thing I think I do very well, even if I don't judge the right thing, I think I'm impartial. I think that I judge objectively. I really do. I think one of the reasons I think I do that is because I usually get in trouble from both sides. I mean, it's difficult to see how I'm favoring one side when both of them are angry at me for my what I think is justice. No, family shouldn't make any difference at all. What about this time? We talked about Jacob and Esau under Isaac and Rebekah. What about this one? What about David and Amnon? Amnon is his son. As the chief executor under God in the nation of Israel, and fully aware, totally privy to the things that have taken place. What should David have done to Amnon for raping his sister, that is, David's daughter? It shouldn't make any difference that Amnon is David's son. Amnon should have been put to death. But David was subjectively sentimental and showed favoritism to this, his son. Now, you might say, it could have also been because he thought, I've done something worthy of death, namely adultery. I didn't get killed for it. How do I now judge my son Amnon, who's done something that the Mosaic Law labels as worthy of death, and judge him as such? Well, you see, those kind of variables, that's what I'm talking about. Those kind of variables don't come into play in the realm of strict judgment. I don't mean strict like rigid. I don't mean strict like harsh. I mean strict like always operating according to principle. And his family has messed up all of his life because of it. How about teacher-student? A teacher has a student. Has another student. That, you know, the one student is the disciplinary problem student. You tend to think the worst about that student. Do you know that some of the good students. I'm not talking about grade-wise. I'm just talking about they're so well-behaved. Sometimes some of those well-behaved students know that the teacher is going to say, if I go up and lie to my teacher about this kid, no way she's going to believe that kid. Because that kid is always into something. That kid's always having to be spoken to. I am the glowing angel of the classroom. Of course I'm going to be believed. So the teacher, in a judgment situation, must not take the past history of that disciplinary problem child in view when she deals or he deals with this particular case. This case is judged on its own merits. You're not judged as guilty beforehand, which is prejudging. When you blend that together in English, you call that prejudge prejudice. Justice is not prejudiced against one party ahead of time. He's not a loser as he walks into the judgment hall before he even comes to the situation. But what about this teacher student? I shouldn't just straight out believe my son or daughter because that's my little darling against that evil, wicked teacher. Man, I would hear stuff. My son can probably even think of situations like this. I'll even tell you about one. My son got like detention like a number of days, like this was happening all the time. And I would say, "What are you doing?" You know, and he would say, he would tell me things like this. He would tell me, "Dad, all I did was walk in the room. I walked in the room and the teacher said, 'You're on detention.'" I said, "Son, teachers don't just sit there waiting for kids to walk in the room and say, 'You're at detention.'" All right? But I'm only hearing one side, though. Now, some parents would just say, "That's the end of the story. My kid told me that. I don't question my kid. My kid doesn't lie." And I could have said at the time, "I don't think Corden lied to me. He's like never lied to me in his life. But this sounds crazy." So, what is one thing that justice must do? You must do it. I remember driving back after a particular detention evening. I'm driving back with my son. I'm trying to talk with him about this, and he's saying, "I'm telling you, she was just in a bad mood that day." Okay. That's the end of the story for those who have partiality in judgment. My son told me this, that's the way it is. And I go down there, you know, gear up, you know, I'm going down to talk to that teacher and blast that teacher. Well, you know what? You've violated the first rule of justice. You've made a judgment on one person's side of the story. One side of the story. Proverbs says, every man sounds great when he pleads his case until his neighbor comes and examines him. You shouldn't, if you're going to operate according to justice, you can't go by one side of the story. Now, lo and behold, I went down to this teacher and I said, "You know, my son, what's going on here? And my son's getting these detentions all left and right here. And he's told me that he just walked in the class and you said, 'You got detention,' because you're in a bad mood that day. Hold on to your seat. I know that they're movable. I know it's not a pew here." But she says to me, "Yeah, that's what I did. I was in a bad mood that day. As soon as I saw him, I said, 'You're on detention.'" I'm thinking, I can't believe what I'm hearing. I can't believe that. It would seem like you would even just try to clean up your carnality. It's Christian school, too. I mean, I'm thinking, but she's saying, "Yeah, that's what I did." At least she confessed to it. At least she told me the truth. He went to this one particular Christian school. That's why I'm not the greatest fan of Christian schools anymore. I've seen too much. I'm not a fan of public school. I'm more of a fan of homeschooling, but I'm not telling you to do that either. I think if you have kids, I feel sorry for you. I don't know what to tell you. I've done it all. I've done homeschooling. I've done public school. I've done only 1 year of public school. My daughter, my son's never seen a day of it, but I've done the Christian school. Most of it's been Christian school. And when I come out of it all, I say, if I had to do it all over again, I feel sorry for you in the 21st century in America if you're a parent. But judgment, it waits until all of the information is in. It hears both sides. Then it comes to decision on the basis of what is written, not on the basis of emotion or feeling or relationship or anything else but truth. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. Let's go to verse 24. He who says to the wicked, "You are righteous," him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. Nations is in the singular here. It's like everybody in the nation understands, you're saying that this person that is obviously evil, you're saying they're righteous. You've shown partiality in judgment. Has that ever taken place in a national situation before? I remember being a kid. I don't know how old I was. I'm going to take a guess. You can do the math later and combine it with history. I don't know. I'm thinking I was like about 10. I remember being in Sears at Penn Circle in Monroeville. We never went there. That's one of the reasons I remember it so vividly, probably. Never went there. My mom takes me there. And I remember seeing, you know how when you go in the television department, they got all the TVs on the same channel? All the TVs are on the same channel, and President Nixon is on there, and he is announcing that he is resigning from the presidency. And why? Because he got caught doing the Watergate wiretapping thing. And then the next president, which was his vice president when he was in office, pardoned him. Now, if that were you or I, we would be buried under the jail. But it's the guy that got me to be president. It's my running mate. And he receives a pardon. I'm not, you know, saying he's so wicked or anything. That's not my point at all. My point is just no partiality. I am the advocate of, in a judgment situation, no partiality. If you do decide in favor of the wicked, the people will curse you. Nations will abhor the person who does so. Verse 25. But those who rebuke, and the wicked is understood, though it is italicized here, those who rebuke them will have delight, and good blessing will come upon them. Those who don't let the... It's in a national setting here. We've said that the first of these verses that we're dealing with isn't limited to the national judgment system, you know, the court system. But the idea is that here, now in the next two verses, it's bringing that national picture out. And, you know, when you try Nazi war criminals and you give them the proverbial slap on the hand, these people are responsible for killing millions. Forget the 6 million Jews. Actually, don't forget them. But that's the tip of the iceberg. You have 6 million Jews. You have every Christian that ever stood against them. You have this huge number of Jehovah's Witnesses that they went after like crazy in the state, in Nazi Germany at the time. You have anyone who wasn't of European extraction. You've got millions and millions of people being killed. Now it's time for judgment. And, you know, you can't live in Germany anymore. Wow, that's commensurate with the crime. you're saying to the wicked, we understand you were just taking orders. So you were right to take orders from your superior. You were not right to take orders from your superior. You were not right to even be in the position where you had such a person as a superior. Nations will curse those who do not rebuke that one who is wicked and rebuke him in such a way that a judgment is brought upon him. But good blessing, delight. Delight here is na'im. In Hebrew it is to be agreeable, according to Strong, to be pleasant, lovely, according to Wilson. That's on those who rebuke. Good blessing, in other words, people speak good things about those. That will come upon those who rebuke the wicked. Verse 26 is a sort of a summary of the last three verses. He who gives the right answer kisses the lips. Gives is literally returns. An answer is davar. He who returns a right word. That is, he who answers with the word correctly, he responds with the word, that one kisses the lips, the signal, the symbol, rather, of affection and appreciation. 27. Prepare your work, your outside work, and make it fit for yourself in the field. And afterward, build your house. This is kind of like the worldly maxim. Sometimes we can say that it's true. Jesus did it, right? Jesus said, in this, the saying is true. It wasn't a saying in the Bible, it was a saying that people were used. He said, in this, the saying is true. One sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that for which you did not labor. So he said, in this particular proverb in the world is true. We can say it true, this one in this case, that this is true. That a mature person sets aside instant gratification right now so that he can take care of his responsibilities and enjoy that promise of pleasure later. The idea is one of priorities in 27. Responsible submission to priorities. Let's take care of what we have to take care of. Then we'll take care of ourselves. Then we'll do that which just ministers to me. Then verse 28 and 29. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause. Neighbor is usually translated or often translated as friend. It is the Greek, is the Hebrew word rea. Do not be a witness against your rea without cause. For would you deceive with your lips? Now here's just an appeal to conscience. The appeal to conscience is, do you, when you're about ready to do this, do you really want to deceive? You really want to lie with your lips? Do you think you want to do that? You always see the kid wants revenge. He wants to punch the other kid in his face. He's getting ready. He's winding up. He's like this. And some adult comes in the room. Johnny, do you really want to do this? You really want to punch him? And he knows that the answer that he's supposed to give is no. Well, of course not. I don't want... No... Everything in him is saying, yes! But he's learned certain ways that adults talk to him and the proper response. Do you really want to do that? Actually, a lot of that is training kids to be liars. We should say, do you really want to do that? And never have made it like, no, do you really think that you want to do that? Like, when they say the first time a kid winds up, do you really want to hit him? And the first time he says, yes! And you say, do you really want to hit him? And he realizes, oh, I was supposed to answer no. No. And then from every time after that, he's picked up through this psychological conditioning that, no, I shouldn't do the harsh thing. I think we should train our kids to say, I think the first time they do that, we ought to do this. They'll say, do you really want to hit him? Yes! Yes, you probably do. Let's talk about why. Sit down, we're going to talk about the flesh. I don't ever want you to lie to me. I don't ever want you to say, no. I want you to say, whatever is the truth. And then, depending on how long that lecture lasts, they probably will still say, no. But do you really want to do that? The answer, the honest answer is yes. I want to drill him straight in his face. That's or else I wouldn't cock my arm like that as you find me come in the room. Yeah, of course I want to do that, Mom. Yeah, that's why I'm, this gives me more force. It's going to hurt more than just going bam like that. If I can wind up, this gives me more force. Yes, Mom, I do want to punch him. Oh, do you really want to punch? We're talking now in the Proverbs, we're talking to adults, and we're saying, appeal to conscience. Step back, put yourself out of that situation, kind of have an out-of-body experience here. Like, step out of yourself and say, think about it before you do this. Do you really want to lie right now? Do you really want to deceive in this situation? Why would you want to be a false witness against your Rhea? Your friend or your neighbor. Why would you do that? Well, maybe they did something to you. Verse 29. Do not say, I will do to him just as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his works. And isn't that the kid's answer all the time? You really want to do that? Yes! The first time, after the first time? No. But he still wants to do it. But did you ever get this one? Maybe the first time it's, yes! And then they get, no, really? And then they learn. But some kids, I've heard this answer too. Like, they don't even answer the question. They don't even say yes or no. They just immediately go to the perceived skewed carnal sense of injustice that was done against them and go to, well, he did it to me! So I didn't ask you that. I said, do you want to punch this kid? Well, he did it to me! Because he knows. What's he saying? I will render to him according to his work. Boy, what if the Lord Jesus Christ was so childish? What if he said, I'm going to render to every one of them according to their works? And he does talk about that at times. The wicked will be rendered according to their works. The righteous at the Bema, at the judgment dais, we're going to answer for the things that we have done in the body, whether good or wicked. Whether good or foul off is the Greek word that I'm translating wicked for you. But nobody's saved if he acts that way. He's going to render just reward-wise according to our works. But there is a whole lot more of us not getting what we should have if it was just, you did this, it deserved that, than there is about getting just desserts. Man, it's called grace. What if God, with all the power in the universe, with unlimited, infinite power, were to say, I will render to them according to their works. The Lord Jesus Christ instead says, when they're crucifying Him, He said, forgive them. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And that was the case with the Romans who were crucifying him. He said that, if you look at the text carefully, at the moment that he was being crucified. It is not true of the Jews who were behind that crucifixion. But those Roman guys, they don't know anything about a Messiah. They don't know any of the issues involved. They know nothing. He can honestly say they have no idea what they're doing. They're just carrying out orders. Do not say, and the say obviously comes from the thought. The idea is, don't think like this. Don't think like, I'm going to get back at them. Don't let your motive be revenge. Now, among believers, that usually takes the form of some kind of emotional manipulation. Cold shoulder, silent treatment. I don't greet you in church. letting you feel in one situation what you made me feel in another situation, liking it when some calamity hits you because of the perceived slight that you didn't sufficiently minister to me. Oh, there's all kinds of ways that it takes place. It's revenge, maybe not so blatant, maybe not everyone sees it, maybe it can be covered up. But don't operate from the thought that says, I'm going to get back at someone. When you do, it's totally outside of the thinking of the Lord Jesus Christ, the mind of God. As I read through these verses now that we've covered tonight, 23 to 29, I want you to consciously think of everything that with the doctrine, not every point, every illustration, whatever, but the doctrine that I've discharged to you this evening. Go through these verses with me again, just in hearing them again. 23 to 29. These also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. He who gives the right answer kisses the lips. Prepare your outside work, make it fit for yourself in the field, and afterward build your house. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause, for would you deceive with your lips? Do not say, I will do to him just as he has done to me, I will render to the man according to his work. By the way, that's the prerogative of God, not any other human being. He who has ears to hear, let him hear.